Welcome to the Southside Report. I am Marius Gleese in the city of Chicago, and Jason Gage is with me, joining me as usual. He's in California, and for the first time in a long time, we are just a few days removed from our previous episode. We went out on Saturday. Here we are on Thursday recording again. Probably out tomorrow, but here we are on Thursday recording again. And we want to make sure that we don't kind of hit on the same thing over and over again, because if you had any thoughts about position players and the trades they should make, you could have listened to the last show. But this show, Jason, we're going to focus primarily, at least at first, on the bullpen of the Chicago White Sox and what arms could potentially be kept for 2008 and 2009 and so on.
Yeah, and I think it's key, because if you look at one downfall of this ball club, yes, you could talk about the offense, which is, you know, the worst in baseball. Yes, you could talk about the defense, which is really severely declined. But the number one factor for this team becoming as bad as it is this bullpen, because this bullpen has blown a lot of games. It really killed the White Sox momentum. And there was a point, let's not forget, in May, when this team was competing for first place and was competing for at least a wild card spot, and it looked pretty optimistic as long as they could get that bullpen firing. And that bullpen had an ERA in the low threes after April. So the key is finding a way to get back to having a respectable pen. And there has been no signs of respectability, even though there's been some strides made by a couple individual members of the pen. Yeah. But it's definitely a situation that Ken Williams is going to have to monitor, and changes will have to be made. But there are some good arms in that pen, and maybe some guys need to stick around for 2008 and in the future.
One thing that we're learning about Major League Baseball and bullpens in Major League Baseball, and it seems like every year it's just becoming more and more apparent, is the fact that bullpens are very much a crapshoot. And as long as you have some arms down there with some ability, it could click at any single moment. Now, the problem with the Sox, in the Sox instance, is that they don't have many guys who have produced at the Major League level. You have Thornton, you have Jenks, you have Boone Logan. Let's get into those three guys first. Number one with Bobby Jenks. We talked about on Saturday about him really being probably one of the top trade baits for the Sox. And a guy they should even consider trading for the simple fact is, if they're not going to compete for another 2-3 years, or even if they do compete next year, he's probably one guy you could kind of do away with and find a closer later on. We're looking at this week, though. Bobby Jenks, is he a guy you keep?
I think ideally he's the guy you move, you sell. And the more you look at things, the more you say that Jermaine Dye is not going to get you those big-name prospects, the big-name chips that can get the Sox younger, get the Sox more talented position-wise. Because I'm overall pretty happy about what I think are the pitching prospects in the system. And we're going to get a little bit more into the minor league system.
Yeah.
Per request from different various posters on Sox Talk that asked for us to talk more about the minors. But you have guys like Jose Contreras, Jermaine Dye, maybe Tadahito Gucci, but none of those guys are going to get you that premier prospect. Yeah. You have a guy like Mark Burley, who I think is going to be back, and I know I went on a little tirade last show, but I think in the end he's going to sign with the White Sox. They're going to somehow make amends, Ken Williams, Mark Burley, and they're going to get things done. And so that's a guy that could have got you at least one frontline prospect, so now that's off the...
Let's even kind of update the whole Burley situation for those Sox fans who maybe listen and maybe don't necessarily follow the team on a minute-by-minute basis like a lot of the Sox talkers do, but that deal was broken down not simply because Burley wanted a no-trade clause, but he wanted a full no-trade clause. Kenny Williams was going to give kind of like a partial no-trade clause, where he was going to have that option to waive a deal in the early part of the contract, and then later on when he would eventually become a 5-10 player. But that middle part, an 18-month period in the middle, is when he was hoping to kind of keep that clause out of it so he could potentially trade him at that time.
Yeah, and I think we should get some credit on our backs because – or pat ourselves on the back, because I know both of us were discussing it, and I know part of my problem with the deal in the first place and refusing to give the no-trade clause was the fact that basically all it took was a year and a half, 2 years, until he actually is pretty much a 5-10 player and can reject anything as is. And, you know, it kind of seems shady that the Sox wouldn't, you know, go farther. But right now it's just a stalemate between the two sides. But everything is so close. Ken Rosenthal of Sports Illustrated or Fox Sports.
The money's there, and the clauses are not far apart. And I think that's pretty key. And I think if worse comes to worse, I think you might even be able to add an option somewhere for Mark Burley, to where if he were to be traded, maybe he could opt out of his contract at the end of the year to kind of give him some power in the deal. So where if a team is interested, Mark Burley could simply go public and say, well, I'm not really looking to stay with you long term, and maybe something happens. But that's for many, many more days, because it may be a couple weeks before he's either traded or signed. Who knows? let's say with the bullpen, we already talked about Bobby Jenks, and I think we're kind of on the same page. He is the guy you move because Jose Contreras, Oguchi, Dai, individually, they can't get you much. Collectively, they might be able to. Maybe if you combine a Contreras with a Dai or a Contreras with the Oguchi, I think you might be able to land yourself a prospect or two. But individually, they don't get you much. Bobby Jenks could get you a lot from an individual basis. So if you could maybe kind of dangle him out there, see what you get, I think that's key. Let's get into Boone Logan, who's really, aside from Matt Thorne's kind of been up and down. Jenks has obviously been very solid, aside from the last his last game on, I believe it was it Saturday night or Sunday night, I believe?
Friday's game where Mark Burley started the opener against the Baltimore Orioles. The Sox had a pretty big lead, I think it was 6-2, and ended up losing.
Yeah, now that was partly Ryan Buckfish. It was partly Bobby Jenks, but in Bobby Jenks' defense, he's been pitching a lot lately because the Sox have been winning, and he's the only guy of the bullpen that they could rely upon. But when you look at Boone Logan, he's made some serious, serious strides from what this guy was last year. And I remember saying last year that I did not see this guy pitching in the major leagues long term because I thought he was maybe a guy you try. If it doesn't work out, you set him down and he's done. But he's proven me wrong because I'm looking at him pitch, and he seems like he has something. He's got a little pop on his fastball. He's got that nice little curveball that he drops in there. He's looked fairly impressive.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think we both commented early last season that Boone Logan was kind of maybe a one-hit wonder. And then when he came up late last season, we both went, wow, that kid has some stuff. And we both kind of took eye to it. He didn't really pitch great late last season when he came up for the second time.
But he
definitely showed a lot. He showed a lot of strides, which is what you want to see. Young players that get better and get better and get better are the guys that really are going to become really good baseball players, especially when you have arms like Boone Logan has. He's basically became the best loogie in all of baseball, and I know it's a term that a lot of people don't like because it means he's basically only going to face left-handed pitchers, and he could eventually develop into a guy that can get both left-handed hitters and right-handed hitters out at a very respectable rate, and he's going to be very valuable for this bullpen. He's probably a guy that I think is close to untouchable, in the sense that I don't think anyone's going to give up a number one ranked prospect to get a guy like Logan.
There's more potential there than what you're going to get in trade value. And I think you have to commend Boone Logan because he was never really considered a highly touted prospect at any point. He was more or less just a fringe player, came up, didn't perform. He went down to the major league level, and he made adjustments, and he did whatever he could to try to make it up at the major league level. So you do have to give him a ton amount of respect for that because he didn't just give up. He kept on going, and he made himself into a decent little reliever, at least for the time being. So he is a guy I think you definitely do keep, like you said, because of the fact that you're not really going to get much from a trade value, and maybe he comes in next year, he might be able to give you a really good year. Even though I don't like the term loogie, because I think if you're a reliever in that bullpen, you should be able to go out there and get out both sides of the plate. But you know what? If he shows the ability to get out some really, really tough left-handed hitters, that's fine by me. Now let's get into Matt Thornton. He's a guy who has loads of talent, and it seems like at times this year, it looks like he figured it out, and then he seems like he doesn't. He was quoted, I believe, last week saying that it seems like he's a very relaxed pitcher. When you see him in the mound, it doesn't look like he's maxing out. It seems like he's got a very easy deliver, which is always what's been so impressive about him, because he's throwing 94, 95 without even trying, it seems. He says that maybe he's a little bit too relaxed out there, and that's probably why his control hasn't been as good. Do you buy into any of that?
I buy it to a certain extent, but I think for the most part, he's just missed his spots. He's lost a little bit of confidence. But overall, if you watch the games Thornton's in, he's pitched a lot better than the numbers would indicate. And he's going to be a guy that I know any team in competition is going to look at and target and is going to be willing to give up something to get a guy like Thornton. Thornton has actually struggled versus left-handed pitching, but he's made improvements, surprisingly, this year with his breaking ball, which is a slider, and his fastball is still very good. It's a matter of getting his location back, and I think part of that is just getting his confidence back because he's given up a lot of hits on good pitches, and then he's kind of thrown up his hands and got a little frustrated, lost it a little bit mentally, and then kind of gave up the big inning.
Yeah,
and he's a guy that I do think you target, and you could potentially get more in return than what he's worth. I think a team like the Milwaukee Brewers, a team like the Detroit Tigers, that have some very good prospects, could give up two or three guys. Maybe not number one prospect type guys, but two or three valuable guys that could fill holes for the White Sox that are more important than a lefty reliever, especially when you factor in the fact that you already have Boone Logan in that pen.
If you think you could get a lot from return, like you're saying, I think it's obviously a trade you have to explore. But there's not many guys, relievers in baseball, who I think have like a long-term career. I think Matt Thorne is one of them because I like the way that he doesn't max out. He's just a nice and easy thrower. He's throwing 94, 95. He's got a nice little breaking ball. I think he's a guy who long-term could be a very solid reliever for the White Sox. Granted, I also said the same thing about Neil Kotz, and that's kind of been up and down. They only started off the year fairly decent with the Cubs, but not so much since, I believe. So I think Matt Thorne has a future as a reliever, and I think he's someone they should probably keep. But if that trade comes along, like you said, if they could get a lot for him, which they probably can because he's a lefty who throws hard, and come playoff time, that could help a lot of teams. I think they definitely have to look into pulling the trigger on that. Now, after this, after you get Paz Boone Logan and Matt Thorne and Bobby Jenks, it's just a matter of, yes, some of these guys have talent, but I would bet most people would not want to see these guys in the Sox bullpen ever again. Some people may disagree, but when you look at a guy like David Artsma, who's kind of had his chances with the Cubs and now with the Sox and hasn't really done it. He's had moments, he's had some shining moments, but for the most part hasn't done anything. Does he have much of a future? I mean, he has the ability. I don't think there's any question about that. He has the ability, but is there any really future with him and the White Sox?
What was the name you just threw out?
Artsma.
Artsma? I think he possibly has a future, but I think he's the type of guy that you give up. You give up if you can get another projectable arm. You take a chance with an arm.
There's no value to him. I mean, he was just sent down again to get Gavin Floyd up here to start on Friday. Well, that's a whole other issue. So I don't know if you can necessarily get much from him. I mean, I think a team might grab him thinking that they might be able to turn him into something. Maybe they look at the ability and then maybe we could be able to do, you know, like a Matt Thorne was last year. But what are you necessarily going to get in return? It's not like you're dealing with this young prospect. I think Artsma has got to be in his late 20s, I believe.
Artsma is actually a pretty young prospect. He was a relatively recent first-round draft pick. He only has 3 major league seasons under his belt. He's 1981, so he's in his mid-20s, you know, 25 years old. So, I mean, there's a lot of good things about Artsma. He's got a good fastball. He's got a good splitter. But the problem is he's got bad command.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think you get frustrated. I think the White Sox have seen it, what walks do to a bullpen. This bullpen imploded mainly because of walks. It wasn't because the talent wasn't there. Guys like Andrew Sisu, David Artsma, McDougal, Thornton, Jenks, Logan, all have fantastic arms, fantastic stuff, all have the ability to be basically closers. Maybe not Logan, but everyone else has the ability to be a closer in that pen, has closer stuff, yet it hasn't worked out. And I think I would be disappointed to see Artsma factored into this bullpen next year unless he makes some serious strides down in the minors. And I have no problem leaving him in AAA and saying, hey, maybe he'll be our last guy in the bullpen next year, but you cannot factor in or expect him to be anything next season. Based on the progress he's made at this point, there's definitely no way you could project him to be a key reliever or a key role player on this team next season, at least not if you plan on competing. Yeah. And if you can get even an A-ball arm that throws hard, that you like, that your scouts like, that you consider doing it, because as much as Artsma has struggled, there's going to be teams that look at his April stats and go, hey, if we can get this guy in our bullpen and get him right, maybe a change of scenery, maybe something, maybe it's worth it.
I think the second half of that duo, because I think Artsma and McDougal have kind of been on the same level this year where they were both sent down at the same time. I think they both came up at roughly the same time. Artsma, of course, was sent down recently. Let's get into Mike McDougal. He came in last year from the Kansas City Royals, all the ability in the world, and we all know that. He showed the ability in Kansas City, had that 1 year where he was a closer and put up solid numbers. The problem is he's got that delivery, which is always just going to cause an arm injury. But this year, perhaps injuries behind it, but it seems like it was just all a control issue. And a lot of walks, like you said, a lot of guys in this bullpen have given up a lot of walks. Mike McDougal, though, before the season, he signed that, I believe, a 3-year deal. It looked like it was a steal at the time because he did so well for the Sox at the end of last year. Now that you have him signed, you pretty much just got to keep him, see what he does next year, because I'm not sure he could get you much in trade value considering he signed that little contract last year.
This is where I think you're wrong. Teams know that McDougal can pitch. The problem with McDougal is in between the ears, and there's going to be plenty of teams that are going to take a chance on a guy like him because he has closure stuff. He's had major league success.
Down the stretch, though? Would they take a chance from down the stretch? I could see a guy like Artsma because maybe you could turn him into something next year, but in a McDougal situation, it seems like if he was traded, it would be for a team that's looking to compete down the stretch.
Yeah, and there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that there's teams with far worse guys in their bullpen, far worse guys closing even than Mike McDougal. And I'm just going to – I mean, Bob Wickman, I would rather have Mike McDougal closing. Now, that may be not Mike McDougal right now, but Mike McDougal, it was not that long ago this guy was dominating last season for the White Sox and early on this season for the White Sox, and there's no reason he shouldn't be dominating again because he is healthy. And teams would give up a good number, some talented arms to get him, even though he's had a down season. Teams would give up something to get him, and the White Sox should consider it. And his contract is still considered a value.
I think the only way that works. I think the only way that works is like I was saying before, is if maybe you do another combination type deal where you package him with somebody else, or if you would maybe take him and Arizman and package him somewhere, maybe a team looking for some two solid bullpen arms. I think at that point you might be able to get some guys who could really produce and help this White Sox team next year. But outside of that, I'm not really teams are going to look at this guy, and yeah, he has all the ability in the world, but at the end of the day, you're going to look at that ERA, which is at probably around 6, and you're going to wonder, this is a guy who has an ERA in the 6. He's had injury problems in the past. I'm not sure they're going to give the Sox much for him, personally.
I think you'd be surprised. If you look back at historically at trades, relief pitching, even mediocre relief pitching at the deadline, gets a lot. Ugueth Urbina is an example. He was a closer at the time when he went to the Rangers. It was a very lopsided deal. Mm-hmm. And Urbina was not a good pitcher at the time that deal was made. Ron Valone, he got a hefty deal as a lefty from the Seattle Mariners going to Florida.
Yeah.
The deal may not have paid out long term, but even look at a guy like McDougal when the White Sox traded Tyler Lumsden, a pretty highly thought of arm. Now, Lumsden has really struggled this season for Kansas City in AAA, but the fact remains this was a guy, McDougal, who had not pitched in a long time, came up only pitching 3 or 4 games with the Royals, and all of a sudden was traded to the White Sox, and the Sox gave up 2 good arms for him, okay. 2 projectable arms for him.
I so stand corrected. You have a point. You have a point. I'm not necessarily sure he would get you that, but maybe there's a possibility. Maybe there's a team out there who like McDougal enough to give up something worth it for the Sox. Now, when Arzuma and McDougal went down earlier this year, two guys they brought up was Prince, who didn't really do much, but Buckvich, who's still on the team. Now, there was a time for about a week's period when this White Sox bullpen was actually doing good. They actually, I think, had a lower ERA than the White Sox rotation, which is surprising, even though they're pitching, obviously, a lot less innings. But Buckvich was the setup man, and it was pretty much labeled the setup man by the White Sox, and then he had that game, of course, Friday, where he kind of just exploded and imploded after Bully came out after 8 innings, or after 7 or so innings. And does Buckvich have any future with the Sox?
I think Ozzie likes him. I mean, Ozzie still said that he's his guy as a setup man. Buckvich does have a good fastball, and I think he has a chance because he has no value in a trade, absolutely no value in a trade. So he's going to get a play this whole season, and if he does enough, yeah, there's no doubt he could be at least a back-of-the-bullpen type guy.
I agree.
Every team has those type of guys that can just eat innings, and Buckvich could be that guy. Maybe he develops into better than that because at least he has a good fastball. At least he's got some velocity behind him. And I want to just kind of slowly go back to a guy like McDougal. The Philadelphia Phillies, and I don't know if the Phillies are going to consider themselves in contention now that they lost John Lieber for pretty much a season as well, and they already have Garcia done for the year. But they have a guy named Michael Bourne. The White Sox are interested in this type of guy because they want speed. Bourne has 13 stolen bases. He's hitting about .260, but he has a .353 on-base percentage. He's a younger type player. Not super young or anything, but he is 24 years old. A lot of speed. The Phillies like him, but the Phillies have some other guys ahead of him in the lineup, and he could be a really good fit in Chicago because he could fill a need in outfield. He gives them the top-of-the-order speed, and McDougal would be a fantastic fit because the Phillies' bullpen has been brutal, and it's been part of the reason the Phillies have kind of floundered where they are because the Phillies do have the best offense in the National League. Yes, better than the New York Mets offense.
Okay, let's get into really when you get left into this bullpen after those guys, it's pretty much – you have Nick Mesett, who I think it's pretty clear his future is as a starter. I'm not necessarily sure if he's going to do much of a reliever, unless, who knows, maybe if he actually gets consistent work out of the bullpen, something could happen. But I think his future is as a starter, don't you think?
Mesett's future has been pretty much wasted this season.
Yes.
I shouldn't necessarily say wasted, but the Sox have really done nothing to help Mesett. Mesett hasn't been able to develop, and this is something I've kind of hampered on at times, the White Sox failure to really put guys in position where they can succeed, because there's absolutely no way that a guy like Mass is going to be able to succeed when he's really getting used so sporadically. And this is a good arm. This is a guy that has good life to his fastball. He throws a four-seamer and two-seamer. He's got a really nasty curveball, the best curveball, I think, in the major on the major league team, aside from Bobby Jenks, because Bobby Jenks' hook is nasty. And he has enough pitches to be a very successful mid-of-the-rotation starter, if not better. And I think the odds of him being better than that are slim.
That's slim.
But there is absolutely no way you can get him to develop without sending him down to AAA and letting him work. Because the White Sox are not going to get better with Nick Massett throwing occasionally out of the bullpen. Even if he dominates out of the bullpen.
You're better off having a guy who you don't really see having a future with this team. Or maybe a fringe guy who might be able to help in the bullpen next year up and getting some mop-up time. But yeah, Nick Massett, in my opinion, his future is in the rotation. There's no reason for him to be in this bullpen. Obviously, September is a whole other story, but you still got a few months left in the baseball season down there in the minor league, so you got to get him some starts. So I definitely agree with that. After that, you have a guy like Andrew Sisco, who has he been starting down at the AAA level?
Yeah, and he finally had a good start, and this is a good thing because I project Sisco as a reliever, and I think he's an arm you hold on to because Sisco really doesn't have any value in a trade.
No.
But he has a lot of value because he's a left-handed arm, and if everything goes right, he can be that second lefty, especially after you move Thornton. He could kind of slide in. Logan moves up as a number one lefty, and Sisco comes in as kind of the backup lefty. But Sisco starting the rest of the season is going to allow him to hone all his pitches, but more importantly, it's going to allow him to finally get a consistent release point. Because if he throws a lot of pitches, that's going to be his only chance, if he can figure it out, and this is a big if, to get a consistent release point, which will lead to consistent control and success, long-term success.
That's actually
because he has his stuff.
A great. I never even thought about that from a whole release standpoint and actually getting out there every 5 days and throwing five, six innings. But that makes a whole lot of sense, and I do agree with you in that case that it obviously is a mechanical issue and just an issue of trying to get control from the throw it over the plate. And I think being in that starting rotation could do a lot, and making that shift from the rotation to the bullpen at that point shouldn't be too hard for him. So I think there is some positive and some potential with Andrew Sisco. I don't think he's the guy that you rely upon. I don't think he's the guy you say, oh, you know what, next year he's going to be in our bullpen and be a key figure. But I think he is a guy that you bring to spring training next year and you maybe give him some shot, or at least give him a look. After that, there hasn't really been many guys who have been up at the bullpen level. I don't think I missed anyone, right, who've pitched at the bullpen level at some point this year. I mean, aside from like a DeJuan Day.
No, and DeJuan Day is one of the key guys that I think is going to be interesting. I think the White Sox are going to say, screw it, and they're going to have him up. He's due to come off the disabled list. There was some talks that maybe he would come off right after Gavin Floyd's start, but that's kind of up in the air. We're going to kind of discuss, like, maybe there's an indication or a sign or a hint of something.
Yeah.
With the fact that Day is not going to be immediately placed on after Gavin Floyd's start. But Day is a guy that has major league fastball and a major, major league slider. He has minor league command. He's got like double-A, A-ball command.
You're going to get guys chasing, but at the major league level, they'll be a little bit more patient for it.
Yeah. And because of that, he's going to have some ups and downs. But there's no need, considering where the Sox are, to not let him just develop at the major league level and see if you can just get innings out of him and see if Don Cooper, because I'd rather have Cooper working with him than the minor league pitching coaches at this point, and see if Cooper can get some things straightened out and get things in place so he can be a valuable asset of this pen next year as a back of the pen type guy, and maybe develop 2 or 3 years down the road as a guy that's a setup man for the White Sox because he has that kind of arm.
Yeah. You know, that actually has me thinking with the whole Don Cooper thing. I wonder at this point if the Sox definitely have a chart of saying, you know, who they're looking at for next year. If a guy like Cooper is maybe spending a little bit more time on certain guys, you know, maybe spending a little bit more time on a Boone Logan rather than a Matt Thornton, or a little more time with a DeJuan Day rather than somebody else. I mean, who really knows how exactly what really talks go behind the scenes. As far as other AAA players, other even AA players, is there anyone at that level? And we're going to get into the minor leagues level in the next segment, but anybody at that level who could potentially come up at the bullpen level and be a productive reliever?
Well, I think right now the problem is the Sox really lack depth, and that's why I've been kind of keying in on the trades like such as Bobby Jenks, because Bobby Jenks can get you more in return and more helpful assets in return than what a closer is to a team that is going to be maybe competing for the wild card. Because a closer is kind of, I think, the final piece of the puzzle, typically, or a frontline starter could maybe be the final piece of the puzzle that makes you a World Series caliber team.
Yes.
As opposed to just a middle-of-the-road type team. But the Sox can wait for that, and a guy like Bobby Jansen can get you a shortstop, a catcher, a third baseman, and maybe it gets you a young arm for the pen that projects into there, and maybe becomes that closure a year or two from now when you really need it. A guy like Joe Devine of the Braves, or maybe a guy like Craig Hansen, who's really struggling in the Red Sox system, but has a great arm. He's a past first round draft pick, and could be a nice fit long term. But really, the only assets we have in house that are going to be even near to be ready. Some people in Sox Talk are calling for a guy like Aram Wasserman. He would almost be like a Rugie, and I'm not a fan of Rugies because I just don't see value. And a Rugie would be like the right hand version of a lefty.
Yeah.
And I don't like it, but I don't see any problem with pitching him because I really think Massett needs to go down so you can open up a spot there.
That's contingent on how deep your bullpen is and how deep your rotation is. If you're going five starters deep like the Sox have, and you have a bunch of relievers, having a right-hander come out of that bullpen who could just be devastating to right-handed batters, I don't see any problem in that. But that's all I was saying. You have to have that deep rotation. You have to have that depth in the bullpen to afford to have one guy who's just facing right-handed batters.
And then you have really the only valuable part of the Neil Kotz trade right now, or the way it looks, is a guy named Carlos Vasquez. He's a left-hander. He's pitched very well. He's given up 22 hits in 33 innings, which you have to like. He's 15 strikeouts, which isn't bad, not great, but the big problem is he has 22 walks in 33 innings, and that's been kind of an ongoing situation for anyone that comes up to the major league level for the White Sox, throwing strikes. And Vasquez is going to have to hone that ability down in AAA before he comes up. But he's a guy that could be a long-term fit in the bullpen for the White Sox. You have a guy like Lance Broadway, who's a starter right now, that could maybe get transitioned into a relief-type role. But I think in a guy like Broadway's case, he has more value as trade bait than he does as a potential fourth or fifth starter. And I think you'll see Broadway go at one point. I used to think it would be at the trade deadline as the Sox would be buyers. But now I think it would be in the offseason when the Sox buy and fill other holes. Being young players, some being veterans, because the key to the White Sox bullpen is going to be to find one or two veteran relievers that can come in and work with these young pitchers, because I think the one thing the Sox really lacked in this bullpen was the veterans that could bring that experience and just basically teach these young guys how to pitch at the major league level, because really you need to do that. Look at what guys like Greg Maddux or Tom Glavine can do for young pitchers. I mean, I think we've all seen what's happened with Maine on the Mets, and Maine has really developed into one of the better pitchers in baseball. And he's not a guy that was ever highly touted, but he's got to work with some really good veterans.
When you look at the Sox team, when you look at the Sox pitching staff, there really isn't a veteran there. I mean, sure, Jose Contreras is old, but who knows if he could even communicate it all with a lot of these other White Sox pitchers. So when you really look at the Sox pitching staff, they don't have that veteran presence that they could kind of go and rely on. And I think that might be a big thing. You know, you even look at 2005, where you at least had a guy like Dustin Hermanson, who was an older guy, or at least a more experienced guy you could maybe kind of talk to a little bit or whatever the case may be. So there's obviously our potential with a lot of these guys in the bullpen. I think really what might be even interesting is if a lot of good relievers nowadays, especially when you're going 1-2 years and you're out of baseball, is just failed starters. So there might be a guy in another team who maybe is down at the AAA level. He's not producing as a starting pitcher, hasn't high ERA, but you know what? Maybe if you put him in that rotation, you put him in that bullpen, maybe he increases his velocity 1, 2, 3 miles per hour, and he can become an effective reliever for you.
Yeah, I think the Sox may look at that, but they're also – Ken Williams is going to be shedding payroll with some different moves, whether it's Jose Contreras going and Jose Contreras plus another starter, because I think the writing's on the wall that two starters are going to get moved.
Wow.
And Gavin Floyd's going to fill one of those spots.
See, I think if that's the case, and I was going to bring this up when you were talking about Lance Broadway, I think if that's the case, then I'm not really sure if Lance Broadway – then I think at that point Lance Broadway might have a future with the Sox unless he's still going to be used as a trade bait. But if, let's say, they trade Jose Contreras, which I think is what they ideally would like to do, and they keep a Mark Burley, and obviously you're going to have then – John Danks and Gavin Floyd might even enter the rotation, I think Lance Broadway becomes even more expendable at that point.
More expendable or more?
I think he becomes trade bait. I think there's a very good chance he'll get dealt.
If they get rid of two pitchers?
I'm saying if they get rid of a Contreras. If they get rid of two pitchers, I think they're going to have to need that depth, unless they're going to use a Lance Broadway to get a very good starting pitcher in. But the problem is that a guy like Lance Broadway, he might be good to be thrown in a trade to get yourself an outfielder or an infielder, which they desperately need. So I think at this point, it would be beneficial for them to trade one starter, try to sign Burley, because I still think that's a possibility now, although I thought differently on Saturday, knowing the situation. Trade one of the starters, you put Kevin Floyd into that rotation, or even give up Nick Massetta a shot, you know, have them maybe battle that out next year, and you then use Lance Broadway to maybe trade for an outfield position, you know, a position player, outfielder, second base, shortstop, whatever the case may be.
Well, I think that's going to be what the Sox do. They're going to move Contreras. I'm pretty much 100% of that, unless they can't find a taker, in which case they're going to work. Because, I mean, what I want to know is, could Contreras get back to his old form, or a shell of his old form, because he has had a loss of velocity. Mm-hmm. He was throwing consistently. He would pop up to 95 mile an hour, and he would throw in the mid-90s throughout all of last season. Mm-hmm. But this season, he's been slowly losing more and more off that fastball, and he's pretty much topping off at 90 mile an hour. And that is a big drop. I mean, conceivably, he's had more like a 7 mile per hour drop in his fastball, and his split finger, which kind of works off his fastball,
yes,
has gotten a lot worse. It rolls a lot more, and it's getting hit. And you got to ask yourself, is it possible for Contreras to regain velocity at his age? Do you think it is? Because I think he has to regain velocity for him to ever get back to his old success, at least at the American League level.
There's been a debate about him needing to pitch over the top, and he's more at the 3/4 inch, which obviously is going to take a little bit off velocity in some guys' cases. And if he's dropping down, he might be experiencing some injury. So, and it might stem back to last year. You know, last year, the first 2 months, I think he was lights out, and then he kind of slowed down after that. So it might be an injury. It might be age. I don't think he has a long future, and by long future in his case, I'm talking next year. I don't think he's going to produce at all next year, but I do think as far as this season goes, I do think he could get it back together, and I do think he could put up some solid numbers for these final few months, which I think is why they have to trade him, because the Sox have nothing to play for this year, and he is not going to be a productive pitcher next year. I would be shocked if he is.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Unless he turns into an Aldueke where he just learns how to pitch, but that's not going to happen. He's a power pitcher. He's always been that. He relies on stuff. He relies on that good fastball. He relies on that splitter.
However, I do think we have to point out the fact that I think if there's any pitcher on the Sox that could regain velocity, and I'm not saying the others have to, because no one else on the Sox rotation currently has had a drop in velocity or anything of major concern, is Jose Contreras, because when you watch him pitch, he is really, and I know Cooper identified this as a problem about 10 days ago and he's been working on it, he is really not getting the leg drive, and because of that, he's lost velocity. And if you get his leg drive back and you get him to push and pitch with confidence, because you can just see his posture out on the mound, he is not confident. And with that, he's just kind of aiming pitches, and he's not throwing. He's not throwing. He's trying to aim and stuff like that instead of just letting it go.
Yeah. And
if he did that, I think
And between years has always been a problem with him. You know, when he was with the Yankees, when he came back to the White Sox, that was a big thing. He has all the stuff in the world, but just getting it between years. And, of course, the Sox got him to start throwing his fastball a little bit more because he got a little bit too split-finger happy. And that might be it. I'm not expecting him to do a huge drop in velocity next year, but I do think age and some injuries are going to set in. So I think next year it might not even be his arm. His back might pop up again next year, and that might cause him to slow down a little bit. But, I think I'm going to go back to what I said. I think this year, I think there's a possibility for him to be productive. Maybe next year for certain parts will be productive, but I think wear and tear is eventually going to set in for him, and he's definitely going to decline starting next year.
And I think with that, the two most important players to root for at this point for the White Sox, up until July 31st, are Jermaine Dye and Jose Contreras. Jermaine Dye, we know, worst case, is going to get you 2 draft picks. There is no way, I would be stunned, unless he had a career-ending injury or some major ACL tear, there is no way a team will not sign him to a 3-year deal, at the very least, that's going to make him worthy of Type A compensation, because his average, even if he has a poor year this year, his average of the last 2 years is still going to get him Type A compensation. And in Jose Contreras' case, you know, if he gets good starts, 3 or 4 good starts down the stretch with his contract, there's going to be a team that takes a chance knowing that, hey, worst case, we saw what starting pitchers got. Contreras' contract is not that bad in comparison. He's going to move to the National League, which will make him a quarter of a run to a third of a run per game better ERA-wise. And he can do it. He can still give you innings. So there's going to be value there. And if you can get Dye producing, instead of getting those draft picks, you could get two AAA, hire AA, AAA, hire quality guys that are more major league ready. So maybe if those two guys do good, you get three major league ready prospects that are pretty highly talented.
Well, you're talking guys. Here we are in July, and you're going to have obviously scouts at every single major league baseball game, and I'm sure there's scouts at the Sox game tonight, and I'm sure those scouts are keeping an eye on Jermaine Dye. I think from an outfield standpoint, I think he's definitely in the decline, and I think a position change might be in his future. But I think offensively, when you look at him at bat, he still has something left, and I think a possibility for him to go on a 1-2 week tear and really get hot is going to help his value. Now, personally, I think if scouts are watching him, even if he's struggling, they're going to see what he's capable of doing. They're going to see that he's still in shape. I think from an offensive standpoint, he could produce for you, and I think that they would be willing to trade for him. But I think him getting hot is going to really help as far as what the Sox get. I think he's still tradable, and I think a team will trade him no matter what he does for these next couple weeks as long as he shows he's healthy. But I think if he produces and puts up some good numbers, that's going to be able to allow the Sox to actually get something in return instead of just grabbing anything they could get.
But remember, what you have to remember is, yes, teams would obviously trade for Jermaine Dye. The question is whether what you get offered is more valuable than the two compensatory draft picks. That's what you have to wonder, than the two extra draft picks. Because two extra high-end draft picks, yes, there's no guarantee,
but you have
those are some high-tool guys. You have to factor that
confident.
In.
You have to be confident, though, that Jermaine Dye is going to finish off the season good. Because if he doesn't, I mean, can you really see a team giving him a three-year deal if he continues to play like he's been playing? And the only reason I say that is because Jermaine Dye would probably rather take the one-year deal and try to get that 2-3 year deal afterwards and get the 3-year deal making only a few million dollars, because I can't see him getting that much. As many dumb teams as there are on baseball who will give dumb contracts out, I just can't see a team giving Jermaine Dye a 3-year deal at, you know, $8 million or whatever the case may be a year for a guy who has produced so little this year.
Let me point out one thing. After April, his stats are not that bad. They're not that bad. It's just a matter of him being on the field. He's only 33 years old. And prior to April, this is a guy that would have got, by some team, not saying it's the White Sox, would have got at least a 4-year, $48 million offer.
Okay. So it's not going to drop off that much. If it does drop off, it's not going to drop off, or shouldn't drop off that much.
Yeah, so you got to ask yourself, is a 3-year, $24 million? I mean, that's there's no reason he wouldn't get at least that to $21 to $24 million, and there's no reason Jermaine Dye wouldn't take that deal, especially if the Texas Rangers came where he's indicated he'd be interested in playing.
I don't know about at least, but if a team offered him 3 years, $21 million, I wouldn't be absolutely shocked. I don't know if it would be at least that, though. At that point, I would be shocked.
I just want to point out that you tend to underrate the market value of ballplayers.
I do.
You go based on what you think that they're worth, and you underworth players. Now, I'm not saying you underworth them. You probably are more accurate in what they should get paid. But, you know, you laughed at me when I said how much money A.J. Burnett would get. And I'm not saying it was a good move.
But he got it.
But he got it. You know, in the end, he got it.
Yeah. Well,
and Jermaine Dye, though, I do think you're right. If he goes on a tear these next 3 weeks, he could get you two top prospects.
Ooh.
And that is a good thing. And I'm talking like two top prospects.
If that could happen, God bless the White Sox. We're going to take a break, I think, right? I think you're fine with that.
Yeah, we're going to take a break.
Okay, because you're not going to throw any extra seconds on
him. And Dye has hit a 3-run homer in today's game.
Wow. See that? His value's already jumped up.
Sox are winning 7-2.
Trade's going to happen at this moment. We're going to go to break. We're going to come back, and we're going to do a special segment where not me, but this is Jason, who will be talking minor league baseball. I'm simply curious. I am a curious fan who knows little about the Chicago White Sox minor league system, and I'm going to ask Jason Gage, who claims to know everything there is to know about the minor league system of the White Sox, I'm going to ask him some questions and hopefully get some answers. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the South Tide Report. Mario Squeeze, Jason Gage, of course you already know that because you're listening to a podcast. This is all via SoxTalk.com, by the way. A site you should probably check out, I think.
Yeah, in fact, this site was just rated by, let me pull it up, Bugs and Cranks, which is rated as the third best baseball blog. It's a generic baseball blog. It's a fantastic site. I'm giving them a little plug because they gave us a big plug, because we are rated amongst the 8 best baseball communities on the entire World Wide Web.
Awesome. And
so from July 26th to July 29th, there's going to be a vote to see which one is number one.
Oh, okay, okay. Because I was wondering if I thought maybe top 8 meant that what SoxTalk.com was the 8th best blog or 8th best message board, and I was wondering if you felt that they should be a little bit higher. You know?
I think it's fantastic that we're included, because there's some fantastic sites that they've already went through.
That is a politically correct response.
And, I mean, I'm just impressed, because I know when we started this site, we got excited when 100 freaking people visited it.
Yes.
And now look at it. 3,500 plus members. And it is huge now.
Yes, I remember those days. I remember one of those days when we get, you know, 5 posts on a subject, and it was the coolest thing ever.
It's so big that we have over 100 people that listen to our podcast from time to time.
Fancy.
I don't know if you knew that.
See, now the thing is, we have 3,000 members, right? You have 3,000 members in SoxTalk.com, and only 100 listen to us. So I don't know if there's 100 smart people or 100... not so smart people.
I think there's 2,900 more people that need to listen to this show.
Good thinking.
That
good
could
thinking.
Get educated. That could learn things.
I'm going to learn things. I'm going to be educated today. I'm going to be learning today about the Sox minor league system. And because I know about, obviously, guys like Gavin Floyd, because he was up with the Phillies. And I know about Massett, who's up here right now, and John Danks. And I know some of these young guys. But other guys I don't know much about. One thing that I think is the biggest hole, I think, might be the outfield from a position player standpoint, because that's where I want to start off. Is it okay if I start off with position players?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, focus outside of the outfielders. I want to go to the middle infield, not third base, second base, and shortstop. Juan Uribe and Tadi Taguchi are pretty much all but gone. We talked about Danny Richard. Is there anyone else at that minor league level, AA, AAA, who might be able to produce in the next few years as a second baseman or shortstop for this team?
There is only one that's double A or above, and that would be Christopher Getz. Getz is playing for the Barons. He has he's been out with an injury, but he's hitting 316 with an 834 OPS. He's a pretty good defensive second baseman. He can play a little bit of shortstop, but he's got below average range over at short. Mm-hmm. But overall, he's a good grinding type player. He's, you know, his tools aren't great, but he does a lot of things good. He's a smart base runner. He's a heady player. He takes pitches. He doesn't strike out
smart.
Much at all.
I like the word smart. That's one of two things the Sox need, athleticism and smart players.
Yeah. And he's a decent athlete. I mean, he's more in the mold of a Tadahito Gucci, not near the power, but more in that type of mold where he's a solid ball player. And I'm talking about Tadahito Gucci 2 years ago, and I'm not saying he's going to be that good. But he's got decent speed. A little bit better than Tadahito Gucci's speed. He'll go first to third, no problem. He's not going to steal a ton of bases. Maybe he steals 10 a year. But he's a good all-around smart baseball player. And worst case, he's going to be a good backup infielder. And then there's a curious name. And this is a guy that I don't know enough about. I haven't done my research on this one. But Jason Bergois, whatever the hell his name is. I don't know how to pronounce French. I just took French in college or in high school. I don't know how to pronounce it, though. Bergois. Yeah, we can go with that. Bergois. But this is a guy that was once a pretty highly touted prospect. He's not that old, and he's been recently promoted to Triple-A Charlotte, and he's been playing well in Charlotte. He is in 31 games. He's hitting .288, and he's posting a .749 OPS, which is on-base plus slugging. But the big problem with him is he's not a very good defensive player. He's got a lot of speed, though. And you know that the Ozzie Guillen loves speed, and one of the things he's really complained about, and he's done it more and more so, is the fact that this team that he's managing doesn't have speed. And if an Ozzie Guillen team doesn't have speed, and this is something that I have consistently berated the Sox on, and this goes on to Ken Williams because he's the one that built this team and he's the one that gives Ozzie this roster. Mm-hmm. But this is a team that's really not built for Ozzie Guillen style of managing, at least in the position standpoint, because Ozzie likes athletes. He likes baseball players. He doesn't give a crap if you walk a bunch, but he wants you to go on the field. He wants you to catch the ball, have a rocket of an arm, and he wants you to do the little things, obviously. He stresses fundamentals, and he wants you to be able to run. He wants you to be able to go to first to third, to score on a single from second base. I mean, those aren't things that are really that big of a deal, but the White Sox just can't do it. They really can't. They've lacked that. Andy Gonzalez, to a point, has helped them out. And Gonzalez is a guy that I would not consider a starter at second or shortstop, but he is showing himself as a valuable all-around utility guy that could maybe play that role of a Pablo Ozuna. And Ozuna will be back out as well next year, so that gives you two guys in that role for next season on the Sox bench, which is nice. But there are no guarantees. Robert Valido, definitely not anymore. The guy is no prospect. If you could trade him for anyone that maybe another team just takes a chance on, and you're taking a chance on another guy that's kind of a failed prospect, then you go ahead. But Valido has no value. And in the lower levels, at this point, there's no one worth considering. You have a guy that was drafted out of the University of Louisville who's really raked the ball, but he's done it in rookie league. He's 23 years old, and there's nothing that, you know, there's no real read you can get on a guy like that, and that's why I don't pay attention to rookie league stats, and I'm not going to comment on any rookie league guys unless there's a super toolsy guy or a super high draft pick, you know, that's worth mentioning.
What about the outfield situation? I mean, we know of guys like Sweeney, of course, and I think he's pretty much it, right? Is there anyone else at the outfield level, AAA or AA, who... And I'm not talking about coming up as a backup outfielder. I think there's a lot of guys who have that, you know, potential. I'm talking about a guy who could, you know, be a legit starter at the major level for this team. Realistically,
Ryan Sweeney's the only option. Brian Anderson has starter ability. He's finally back. He's been hurt most of the time since he was sent down. The last week or so, he's been playing pretty good baseball. He's still striking out at a ridiculous rate, though. But maybe he can overcome it because he has a lot of, you know, defensive strengths. And the question is whether he could get a shot with Chicago. If they sell off with Pasetic now out, Erstead now out, if they could sell out those two guys, sell off with Jermaine Dye, then whether Ozzie likes Anderson or not, there's going to be a spot for him. And if Anderson can play his way on, then yeah, you may have a starter there. You may be able to luck out there. Ryan Sweeney's a guy that I think is a starter. I really like Sweeney. More so than some people. Some people love Sweeney more than I do. But he is a guy that you could start. And he should be up instead of Jerry Owens. Jerry Owens is a non-factor. He's a fifth outfielder at best. I've said that repeatedly.
Fifth outfielder at best. All right.
And down in AA, you don't have any major league caliber outfield talent. The lower levels, maybe. There is one guy I shouldn't lie on in AA that is a potential maybe 35 home run guy. But he may strike out 300 times at major league level, and that's Thomas Calero. But he's worth keeping an eye on because he's made a lot of strides.
Yeah.
He has made some strides, and you got to just watch. Anytime you have a guy that has that type of power, you always got to go watch because maybe switch flips. And you can afford those strikeouts if he's hitting that much home runs in the sixth or seventh spot.
Now, A.J. Brzezinski, obviously catcher. I mean, in a few years, he'll be up into that range where you kind of wonder how much he's going to be able to play, if he's got much of a future left with the Sox, especially depending on how much they go into the rebuilding mode. Triple A, Double A, Single A, is there a catcher? And I'm not even talking about Triple A. I think maybe even more Double A, Single A. Is there a catcher down there that the Sox could see, you know, moving up? Maybe not starting next year, but looking at them for maybe 2009 as a catcher?
There definitely is. I know a lot of people say the Sox don't have a good catching prospect, but I think a lot of people overlook Donnie Lucy. This is a guy that was a very high draft pick. I think it was a second-round pick out of the University of Stanford. The Sox took him with a Cal State Fullerton, and me being a Titan alum, I followed the guy Kurt Suzuki, another catcher who has made it up already with the Oakland A's. Whether he's going to stick a catcher has always been the question because Suzuki didn't have the defensive strengths that a guy like Lucy had, and Lucy played behind... Can't think of his name right now. He's the DH type. He's a DH type player on the Cleveland Indians. Who was a catcher at the time. He's now first baseman / DH. Ryan Garko. Mm-hmm. And so he played behind him. So he didn't get a lot of college playing time until late in his career. But Lucy is a very good athlete. And he's the exact opposite of what the Sox have right now because he's got a gun. He throws out more than 50% of the guys down there. He's a great athlete. And the Sox took him for his athleticism. And offensively, he's starting to make some strides. And a key thing that I like to point out about catchers and their progress, usually their bat is the very last thing that comes around because you have so many things you have to work on before you even think about your offense. Because to be a good catcher and to be a good catching prospect, you got to learn how to handle a pitcher. Mm-hmm. Because let me tell you one thing, catching prospects in college do not call their own game. Very rarely. It's always called by the coach. So this is really the first time when they get to that minor league level where they're calling their own game. They go out for the mound visits. They got to work on their footwork, improve their fundamentals, and really become a good all-around catcher. Mm-hmm. And Lucy is really starting to do that. He's the best defensive catcher in the Sox system. He's got a gun for an arm. He projects to be a good defensive catcher. And offensively, he made strides this year, and I think you may see him make more strides next year because he has the tools to be a guy that maybe hits 15 homers, 25 doubles, and he has good speed for a catcher, and he could be a backup for the White Sox next year, especially if Toby Hall doesn't stick around. Maybe they move him, and Hall's a guy that should have surgery right now, and Lucy should get called up to AAA, where he can get some more time at that level.
Yeah. Okay. I had no idea. I know the name Donnie Lucy, it does ring a bell, but I didn't necessarily know he was a catcher, so... That actually did it for me. You did a good job on that because I did not know about him. So kudos to you, Mr. Jason. We're going to get into the starting pitching, but one thing I'd like to see, is there anyone, and I'm not necessarily about a first baseman, but is there anyone in the Sox level who could be a left-handed power bat? I mean, you look at a guy like Jim Thome, who doesn't really have much of a future with the Sox. I think his age and injury problems are going to get to him. A.J. Pierzynski, another case. Is there a left-handed bat anywhere in the system who could produce as a power bat any position?
Give me one second here.
I mean, like Ryan Sweeney, obviously, yeah, I don't consider him like a pure left-handed bat. I mean, he's a good hitter. He's a nice – I'm talking about just a guy who's just like a fairly big guy.
We're talking a pure power hitter. And this is a guy that has – Tom Calera is one name I said. That guy has power. He's a right-handed bat, though. Mm-hmm. He strikes out a lot. This is a guy that was a high school pick. He was really touted. He's kind of floundered a bit in the minor leagues in his career. But last season he hit .213 in the Sally, but he hit 15 home runs. And Sally's the low A-ball team. This year he's repeating. His average is up to .276. He's got 9 homers, 25 doubles already. He's posting only a .785 OPS because he really doesn't draw many walks. He's got some strikeout issues, but he has a lot of pure power. He's got potentially 30 home run power. And if he can continue to make strides, he's definitely the type of left-handed bat that can be a slugger because he really doesn't play anywhere defensively speaking. And then and to go on further with that, I'm trying to look up here and verify the fact that he is a lefty. I'm having a hell of a time finding him in my...
Well, the only reason I ask that is because I'm wondering if there's... Obviously, when you obviously want to get the most athletic guys possible, I wonder if there's anybody in the minor league who may be a bigger guy who has some power potential. Because while I'm not really big on home run guys, I do like the fact of having one or two guys in a lineup who do have that that capability to hit the ball over the fence, kind of use it more as a threat and more of a put a little fear in the pitcher more than anything else. So I was wondering if the Sox had any of that depth in the minors from a power standpoint, from a pure natural power standpoint.
They definitely don't have anyone else who's that pure power hitter from the left side. The other guy they have, though, and this is a guy that's a legitimate prospect, and he will become, if he can continue this, into high A ball, which is where he should play the second half of the season, and then be in double A next year. This is a guy that's going to emerge as one of the better power hitting prospects in all of baseball. His name's Chris Carter. He was originally drafted as a third baseman. He's since moved to first, but he already has 18 home runs. He's posted a .938 OPS, and this guy can rake. He's in .294, .387 on base percentage. He draws walks. In 80 games, he already has 44 walks, 66 strikeouts, so less than a strikeout a game. Yeah, it's a high total in strikeouts, but it's a decent total for a guy that was a high school player, and he's a guy that you have to keep an eye on, but there is no long, you know, power bats immediately coming up in the system.
That stands out.
Aside from Josh Fields, who's already at the major league level. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a lot of those power bats in the Sox organization.
On the starting,
definitely no guarantees.
On starting pitchers, you talked about Lance Broadway. I mean, you really didn't get into Lance Broadway in detail, but you did talk about him, you know, more or less being trade bait more so than anything else. You could even touch on Broadway if you want, but just Broadway, any starting pitcher past him, AAA, AA, single A, who the Sox could potentially look at. Even though the rotation looks set for the next few years, which I think kind of knocks off a lot of AAA pitchers, anyone who has potential, maybe guys that they drafted over the last year or two?
Yeah, I think the biggest upside guy, but I'm not going to start with him, is a guy named Faustinos De Los Santos. And he's a guy that, as long as he stays healthy, you are going to hear more and more and more and more about him because he's one of the few guys the Sox have had in a long time that's that number one type of arm. Wow. The more reports that come out of him, the more that people are really, really raving about this kid. But he is an A-ball kid. And with that, that means you have a long way to go before you get to that major league level. And a lot of things can go wrong.
How old is he?
He is pulling up the age right here. What the hell am I having so much trouble pulling
up? I'm assuming he's got to be, what, 19? Maybe 18?
No, he is a little bit. I think he's 20 years old. But
20 years old, that's not bad either. I mean, if he can make his strides over the next year to get to the AA level, you know, as a 21-year-old or so. I think that's a decent path to take.
He is 21 years old. He was born in 86. And so far, I'll just kind of factor in De Los Santos. He has a mid-90s fastball. It continues. He sustains this late in the games. In 80 innings in double in low A ball, he's given up 44 hits and struck out 98 batters. Wow. 32 walks, which is not a, you know, that's not unforeseen. He's given up 5 home runs, and he's 6-3 with a 2.9 ERA. And those are 13 starts. And this guy has been dominant. He gets left-handers out. He gets right-handers out. He is a fantastic prospect. And he is going, once he hits that double-A level, if he can continue his success, he is going to be on everyone's boards. He's going to be the guy that when teams call, they call for him. This is a guy. This is something the Sox haven't had in a long time. He's out of the Dominican Republic. And this was kind of like an undrafted free agent type signing. And he's really, really emerging.
So we're looking at like a – if everything works out, of course, if he goes to double A and makes progress and goes to triple A and continues to develop, we're looking at what, 2009, 2010?
You're definitely talking, yeah, you're not talking more. Next year. You're talking 2009, best case. Best case, he hits double A and triple A next year. Mm-hmm. In 2009, he makes, you know, he takes a shot in here. And 2010 is obviously a realistic expectation as well. Maybe 2010 he's become a mainstay, a fourth or fifth starter in your rotation.
Yeah.
He's moved his way up a bit. And then you obviously the next guy you have to talk about is a guy that's much more major league ready, and that's a guy named Giovanni Gonzalez. He should be a name that rings a bell for people because he was originally drafted and touted by the White Sox, and he was touted when he was drafted as a high schooler as the guy that had the best curveball in the draft, or arguably the best curveball for a prep pitcher in the draft. He still has that curveball. He's got a nice velocity on his fastball. You can find out a little bit more about him if you stop by FutureSox.com, as we recently put up an interview with Gonzalez, thanks to the AA guy down in Birmingham who conducted the interview for us. And he has a high potential type guy, and his changeup is going to be the key. It makes Gonzalez a number two pitcher, number 2/3 pitcher, or a number 4 or 5 type starter. And he's really been making progress with it, but he's got to continue to do so. And Gonzalez is a guy to keep your eye on because there's a chance that you see him starting this year. There's a chance maybe the Sox late in the season just bring him up in the pen. But the only major question mark about him is whether that third pitch develops, which is the changeup to go with his fastball and curveball. And his fastball has very good movement, good life, good velocity. His velocity has actually increased since being drafted. And he can top out now at about 94 mile an hour. Mark, but he pitches more in the lower 90s, but can occasionally bring it up. And there's questions about his durability because he has a slight frame. He's about 5'10", and that may be an exaggeration. And he's very, very thin, you know. But you watch guys like Roy Oswalt pitch, or a guy like Tim Linnacombe, the top prospect of the San Francisco Giants, is pitching. And these slighter pitchers have become more common. I mean, Pedro Martinez is obviously the ultimate example of that. And yes, Pedro has broken down. He's gotten into his 30s, but he still was a dominant pitcher for how long?
Yes.
Past that, though, you got to look at a guy like Kyle McCulloch. He's a former number one pick. He doesn't have much upside. He's a guy that I would indicate on trading, but he had an ERA of right around 2 this past month. Lance Broadway, everyone knows about him. He's been really working with his two-seamer, and I think you got to watch what Broadway does from here on because I don't think he's going to be at the major league level unless Gavin Floyd struggles. Although, if the Sox trade two guys, Broadway may be the fifth starter. Floyd would be the fourth starter. Maybe Nick Massa becomes a fifth starter. You don't know in that case, but there's a chance Broadway would be up. But he's basically started brand new this season with a two-seamer, and then he's throwing it a lot. And he's already had some good success down in AAA. He doesn't have the velocity on the fastball that you would like out of a first-round draft pick, which is when the Sox took him. But he has a great spike curve, good changeup. He's got good feel for pitching. He gets good sinking action on his ball, and he keeps it down. So he has the ability to be a decent pitcher. Not an ace, but he's got the ability to be so. And if you watch now, he should have had 6 months there, or half a season, to hone that two-seamer. So now see if he can really start to dominate with the addition of the two-seamer to go with the four-seamer.
Okay. I gotcha.
And those would be the four guys I kind of like say that are keep your eye on the most.
For the rest of that, it's just more or less trading. Like long shots or somebody making tremendous strides over the next you know, 3 months of the baseball season for, you know, going into next year.
And I kind of did that pause because I'm hoping that Alex Ernst, Future Sox guru, Sox Talk admin, is listening and kind of screaming because there's a guy named Jack Egbert. This is a guy you should all know about. Egbert, sinker baller, ridiculous whip. He gets tons of ground balls, does not give up home runs, even though he actually gave one up in today's minor league game.
Yeah.
But he has a ridiculous sinker. Maybe not Brandon Webb good, but there is some statistical, if you look at a statistical approach, and I'm not a big fan of that, but there are some statistics. If you compare minor league numbers of Brandon Webb with Jack Egbert, and you get some comparisons, and there's a possibility that he could, you know, develop into that type of guy. But sinker ball pitchers can have success, especially when you factor in the fact that they're going to be pitching at the cell. So he's a guy you got to keep an eye on. He should get promoted to AAA, and then it's going to be curious to see how his numbers do in a real, real small stadium of Charlotte, because he's been pitching in AA where, you know, it's a huge park, and a sinker ball should have success in that park. And then Adam Russell, the last guy I even want to talk about in the rotation. He's got a great arm, 95 mile an hour. He started to drop down. He got a lot more movement on his pitches. He's not been as good as you'd like to see him down in AA, but he's still very good. He's still the type of guy that has a major league arm, and you should watch him. He's still probably a year or two away, and he probably projects as a reliever, a good reliever at that. But if he can continue to develop his secondary pitches, his slider, get a more feel for his changeup, he could be a major league starter, and a good one at that. He could be, but there's a lot of risk to a guy like Russell.
That's it? Any other guys? Any other long shots? Nothing, right? I mean, I think you named about, you know, 6-7 guys, and I think when you go through any system, I think that should pretty much be your number. I think when you start getting into the 12, 13, 14 guys, you start to stretch a little bit unless you're really going through the system into the rookie levels. But you made that clear that and I agree, it's really not that important at this point when you're talking about an 18-year-old or, you know, an 18-year-old kid. There's still a few years before he should be on anybody's radar, I think. All right, well, I think it's going to be time for us to head out, Mr.
Yeah,
Gage.
we're going to call it a show. I'm not going to do a third segment.
We did another hour-long, hour-long two segments.
I want to recap one thing. For any of you that just listened to that minor league list, you should listen to the excitement I had for the pitching prospects compared to the position prospects. And you got to factor in the White Sox already have four good starters currently in their rotation, and I'm not counting Jose Contreras as a good starter. They also have Gavin Floyd, who's pretty much major league ready, and that name was never thrown in. Yeah. Nick Massett was a name that was not really thrown in. So they have some pitching depth, especially in the rotation. And some of these guys may get transitioned to the bullpen. Some of these guys may get traded to fill other pieces because the Sox have an old position team, and there really aren't many guys aside from Josh Fields and Ryan Sweeney ready to or capable to come in. Yes. So you got to look at the White Sox. You got to look at Ken Williams. And what he's got to do is get some young position talent in here and get it to play down the stretch this season so you can get some of those parts in there and then fill some veterans in this offseason. And if Kenny can do a good job, this team can compete next season because it does have the arms. This does have the second best starting rotation in the American League. And you can't forget that.
And for those of you who think, you know, you look at the Sox minor league system and you're not too happy with the depth on the pitching end, the reason you need that depth is for trade purposes. You're not looking for the depth for this rotation. You want the depth for these trade purposes so you can get these position players. And realistically, a lot of these guys that you did mention from a pitching standpoint, more or less, those guys, you have to think they're more trade bait in the future than anything else. Maybe one or two might have a chance for the White Sox rotation, but I would think that most of them are going to be realistic possibilities for trade bait because, as you said, the Sox need position players, and they have nothing at the minor league level is the impression that I got from you. You know, Ryan Sweeney, I think, is one realistic possibility and a couple of question marks, so position players is where they have to build on, without question. And maybe that's something they got to start looking at in the drafts. Who knows?
Yeah, and it could start with a guy named Matt Kemp from the Dodgers system, 5-tool talent. Apparently, I read somewhere that some scouts somewhere compared to Manny Ramirez. I think that's going a little bit to the extreme, but he's a very good type of talent. You know, guys like Wilson Benjamin. We've thrown all the names around, and I don't want to get back to that because you guys can listen to our last couple shows where we've talked about it. And I'm hoping – we were kind of hoping last show that when we had this planned for this early show is we were going to have some action on the Burley front or trade with Contreras. But we're hoping that next time we're on, we'll be able to maybe analyze some of the new talent comes in, some of the new faces, and we'll start to get a watch and talk about the future of this franchise and the future of the 2007 White Sox. Because I do think it's valid to point out that if Ken Williams does a fantastic job, and it's going to be a tough job that he's got ahead of him, it's going to be real tough going up into July, and then he's going to have another key job going on this offseason. But if he does a good job, he could have this team set up again to run in 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011. Yeah, you're going to be pushing it when you talk about 2008, but it is a possibility. So don't get too down, Sox fans. But this is going to be a key couple weeks, a key couple weeks in deciding what Ken Williams does in the 2007-2008 offseason,
yeah,
so to speak.
Hopefully on the next show, which maybe a week or so from now, something will have happened. Not a whole lot will probably go down, but something will happen to at least kind of get us thinking of what direction Kenny Williams is looking to, because I would assume that by August 1st, the direction of this team will pretty much be set and will be on its way, depending where he's looking to go. So you just keep on sticking tuned to the show. We'll be back whenever it is that we get back. Thank you for listening. Jason Gage, do you want to plug anything? I know you're on a time limit right now. You got to head out. But is there anything you'd like to plug as you always do?
Yeah, you know, get over to TalkBulls.com. Talk about the recent Nocioni $38 million offer by the Bulls. There's some reports that the Memphis is going as high as $46 million. John Paxson has continued to reiterate that he will not let an asset like Nocioni walk, and he will match any offer. And that's a good thing. And there has been some talk via PTI, via some other places, that Paul Gasol could go in a sign-in trade with Nocioni, Joakim Noah, and Chris Duhon. I personally think it's a ludicrous rumor because the Bulls would absolutely steal in that deal, but maybe it's a possibility. Maybe a different offer on the table is a possibility to get Paul Gasol. Whatever the case may be, get over to Talk Bulls and talk about it. Because you also have a guy like Darko Milicic. Orlando signed Rashard Lewis.
Okay.
Outright now, Milicic is an outright free agent.
Don't get too excited.
You'd be a good fit for post problem, so check that out.
Don't get too excited.
Check out TalkBears.com. Mario's afraid I'm going to go on a 10-minute rant here.
No, I'm afraid you're going to do like, we'll be right back. Don't do that to me. That would break my heart, Jason. That would break my heart, and I love you too much for that to happen.
Yeah, I'm not going to break your heart this week. There's going to be a time and a place where I'm going to throw out a 4-segment show, and you're really going to cry. You are going to scream bloody murder, and you're going to cry because I know the fans like to hear more and more of us. Well, at least more and more of me. I don't know about you. I don't know what they think of you, but I know they think I'm amazing. They think I'm great.
It's begun.
I know I think I'm great.
Let's call it a show. Let's call it a night. It's my
bedtime.
You want
to see the future of the White Sox? We're going to be talking about the future of the White Sox. Tune in tomorrow. Watch the White Sox. Watch Gavin Floyd start game two. It appears it's going to be game two of that doubleheader. And watch him because he may be the future. He may be the future direction. He may be a long-time starter for this organization. So check it out. Hear our take on his start whenever we're back next. Hear our take on many other things soon enough. Have a good one.